Carolina will inbound. He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! He scores at the buzzer, and the Nets win 120 to 118.
I think we see Willis coming out.
Here comes Willis.
Carter, over to Kidd. Baseline drive. Kidd throws it up. Oh! How did he do it?
Randle on the drive, stripped by Butler. Randle gets it back. Randle puts up a three. Bang! Bang! Randle knocks down the three with 7/10 of a second remaining.
With full court press coverage on all of the signings, trades, big games, and everything Knicks, Nets, and across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome in, everybody, to a new episode of Pick and Pod. I'm Chris Persiainen, and here alongside Will Talent and Owen Kelty. Man, are we excited to get talking right now about the National Basketball Association. Welcome into WFUV Sports' exclusive NBA podcast, where we cover all things across the association, including sometimes unfortunate things, which is where we'll start today. But you guys know how I like to start things off. I'm going to start with Will, then go to Owen. Give me a sentence about how your week's going so far.
My week has been going very quickly. There it is. My week has been very fast. Sorry, Thursday. I can't even believe that. Getting into the weekend. But as you said, Chris, I'm pumped to do this show with you two. Have not done a show together. But unfortunate news to open our show. Karl Anthony Towns, that's some big news. Him being out indefinitely with that torn meniscus. We'll get into it, and I'm excited to talk some ball with you guys today.
Owen, talk to us, okay?
The week started a little rough. Had a couple essays that were due on Tuesday that I forgot about until the last minute, but, you know, got them done now. So week's been much better, and now I can look forward to watching a good weekend of basketball. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, so same for me here. It's been a tumultuous week. Been on the road with Fordham Men's. Had a whole bunch of stuff going on. But you know what? We got to keep it moving, because what does not stop is the NBA until all teams have played 82 games, and then it's crunch time. So let's get into it, man. One of the top contenders for an NBA championship this season. If you look up right now NBA title odds, the Timberwolves have tanked down to plus 2,000, plus 3,200, depending on the platform. All the way is plus 3,500 on DraftKings. They were just recently in the top five teams, the top five odds for a championship. Karl Anthony Towns has a really, really unfortunate injury. Guys, this is never a good thing in the NBA or any sport when a player is injured, but we talk about it here on the pod to unfortunately kind of recalibrate expectations for things. So to start out, for Karl Anthony Towns, a Dominican from New Jersey who loves basketball, I have to respect him, you know, but the torn meniscus in the left knee is absolutely brutal. I'm going to be as blunt as possible. Will, do you believe in Minnesota still? If they lose him for the season?
I just can't. I think Oklahoma City just takes this now, and they have to run with that, you know, that close separation that they have between one and two. They've been fighting back and forth, especially over the last couple of weeks, but I just can't see it. I just can't see it. Cat, 22 points a game, 8.4 boards with a little over three assists. He's having a career season too, 62 points in a game's a franchise record. So, you know, he was just having an all-around great season, and he's truly the catalyst of that offense for Minnesota. And having Naz Reid coming off the bench is nice, but now with him getting those consistent minutes as the starter for Cat, I really don't see how this Timberwolves team can, you know, sustain that number one seed in the West Conference success that they've had. So this is definitely a really big blow for the Timberwolves, the team, and, you know, just the city as well, dying for a good team, and they got one this year in the Timberwolves. I still think they're a playoff team Absolutely. I think Ant Edwards, you know, maybe we'll see a new gear from him. But overall, losing Cat is just, I think we're going to see a little bit of a downward spiral for Minnesota.
Yeah, when you look at it too, like the Timberwolves this season, they're the first seed in the West, but everyone kind of looks at them much lesser than that team in the West. And now losing Karl Anthony Towns, you look at if they stay the one seed, which they most likely won't. Even if they fall down to the three seed, then they're going against the Suns in the first round. You don't want to go against Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal. Even as the one seed, playing a team like the Mavericks, Warriors, Lakers, if the Kings were even in there, that's not matchups that you really like for the Timberwolves. And then losing Karl Anthony Towns, he's been that second option on that team all year. So losing him kind of just moves you so much farther down in those standings. And after last year, the Gobert trade not working out, and then this year, the pieces all fitting together, it kind of felt like this was their year that they could make a run. Now that you lose Karl Anthony Towns, similar injury to Joel Embiid, who's been out for, what, 2 months now? And yep, he really has no sign of coming back. So with only a month left in the season, I don't really see a way Karl Anthony Towns even comes back.
I don't want to just – this is not Rudy Gobert slander, okay? I actually really like Rudy Gobert. But, Owen, when you were talking and you were saying, yeah, the Timberwolves are the one seed, but no one really sees them that way, don't you think of the Donovan Mitchell Utah Jazz? Like,
oh, yeah, it's so similar to that because those teams were always so good, but then they hit the playoffs.
Well-coached. Like, well-coached teams. Snyder was on it, and Chris Finch is really good, I can tell you that. But I want to talk to you guys about a problem that Minnesota has. Mike Conley doesn't touch the ball in crunch time. Like, almost dang near factually. He goes several possessions in a row every single game without a touch in crunch time. And as a result, the steady veteran hand that he brings to this team is kind of just a finger pointing at Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns saying, you young bucks got to figure this out because we don't go anywhere as a team if you guys don't figure it out. Now it's kind of all up to Edwards. Maybe we see Conley step up and be someone who, you know, we know he can be, but for Minnesota, I agree. This really does hurt their championship hopes. As much as people like to make fun of Karl Anthony Towns, he's 7 foot tall, Zach LaVine. He's the worst supermax in the NBA. He changes, you know, his voice for interviews. People will do anything to make fun of Karl Anthony Towns. I don't know why. The big purr, that's a setup on its own, right? Like, we can agree that that's like someone
right away from this.
Someone on the Timberwolves media team like absolutely hates him and was like, I'm gonna ruin the rest of his life. I just think that this team has had so many weird vibes around it that now with this injury, there's just no shot. And I totally agree with you, Owen, that like, this is just not a team you take super seriously. Will, I agree with you that this is not a team you can buy based on the circumstances. I guess my angle here would be based on where Minnesota is in their team building process and who they entrust as their number one option in Anthony Edwards. I actually think he's the main reason, quote unquote, why they're not a contender right now, like in everyone's eyes. And it's because he's super young. So as he continues to figure things out, he'll get battle tested. He'll lose more playoff series. He'll win more playoff series. That experience will come. I'm buying the Timberwolves long term. I think they can figure this out. They no longer have the fewest draft picks in the NBA, right? Like those, you unlock a new set every year that you go forward. So for Minnesota, I'm buying them going forward. But man, am I selling stock like hot potatoes for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, for the rest of the year, that's the best way to put it. You're just kind of going to sell a little bit of those shares. But definitely, I like where you're at, KP, in terms of the long term, because the long term is there. Absolutely. But it's, you know, it's a work in progress. And Edwards, he's a work in progress as well. He's got a great career projection. He looks like he could be a future MVP, but it's going to take some time, and there's definitely no need for them to rush up there. Cat also is not, you know, he's not super young, but he's not also like on the wrong side of 30. So
not close.
They have a little bit of room to work with there. You know, Rudy is Rudy. He's a little older, but I think, you know, sticking with the tandem of Ant and Cat is the way to go, but going to have to wait just a little bit now.
Owen, I want you to hold on right here because I'm going to you first in our, as we pivot, pun intended, to right here in Manhattan or downtown in Manhattan. The New York Knicks, man, you talk about injuries. Talk about, the Cleveland Cavaliers now missing 60% of their starting lineup. Well, this is a team that's been missing 60% of their starting lineup for so long that they didn't even have all the players on the team. They were missing them. You know, Mitchell Robinson was out before OG Anunoby was a Knick. Those two have never played together. Knick fans can only dream about the combination of size and athleticism that Anunoby and Robinson will bring to the table, right? So in my opinion, when it comes down to the New York Knicks, there's no way to evaluate this team as is right now. Bogdanović and Burks thrust into larger roles since their trade deadline acquisitions than they were probably expecting to be in, or that the team was expecting them to be in. Oh, and I'm going to start with you with the injury updates, like known that OG Anunoby is getting back to 5-on-5 work, that maybe by next week he could come back. Just give me a temperature check on hope for this team for this season, for this year's chase at breaking through.
Well, seeing that OG is day-to-day now and Mitchell Robinson could be coming back soon, Jalen Brunson had good news, and seeing that they're going to come back possibly next week, still kind of unknown on Julius Randle whether or not he's going to be two or three more weeks away. But the last few games, it's felt like this season, once Jalen Brunson went down, it felt like for this season, the expectations went from a conference finals appearance to a first-round exit. But now you see all these guys starting to come back. And if they come back within the next 2 weeks, that gives them about a month left to work together and get that chemistry back going, get Bogdanović and Burks back in those roles that they were traded for. I think you have to look at the ceiling back as an Eastern Conference Finals appearance, at least, because the way this roster was built, we talked about this right when the trade happens, it was for OG Randle and Mitchell Robinson to be there. And then about, 14 games they played together, and then all of a sudden everyone is hurt and you're playing Charlie Brown Jr. 20 minutes a game. So the last few weeks, you can't really evaluate this team, but now with them coming back in the next 2 weeks, I think you can raise your expectations back to an Eastern Conference Finals appearance if they come back healthy. Randall's still going to be an unknown whether or not that shoulder is going to be able to play the same way he was playing earlier in the season or if he'll be able to shoot the way he was shooting. So he's the biggest question mark still, but with Anunoby and Mitchell Robinson coming back, I think you can raise your expectations a lot more.
See, that right there, Owen, I like what you're saying. I'm going to call out the Randle question, though. I think we're at a point where we have to sit there. We have to sit here and think, all right, we have all of these different gripes with Julius Randle. This guy's a two-time All-NBA guy, two-time All-Star. I'm very confident in his ability to overcome this injury. I'm very confident in his ability to adapt with this injury. Just look at how he plays this year. He was predominantly a three ball guy last year. This year, sacrificed those 3-point opportunities and gave more to Jalen Brunson. So he has to use the paint a lot more and he has to drive, and he's still an All-Star. So I think it's more of a concern of, is everyone going to click like they thought they would when they initially acquired everybody? Yes, Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović need to be in their roles that they were acquired for. That would definitely help. But I think Randle is less of a question mark than a lot of Knicks fans think because of the adaptability he's shown over the last 2 years. I think he can adapt from this injury in one, like, whatever time he needs.
I think it's really easy when someone complains every time you need them to be malleable or flexible to say that they're not flexible, but reluctantly flexible is still flexible, right? Like, Randle may have had issues every single time Barrett threatened his touches, that someone came in to take his touches. But think about it like this: the guy who was two-time All-NBA in orange and blue, not just as an NBA player, really believed he was the best player on the team. Now, Knick fans thought maybe Barrett was. Some Knick fans thought Elfrid Payton was the next coming of Rod Strickland, right? So, you know, Knick fans think a lot of things. And I personally thought Frank Ntilikina was the next great point of attack defender that would be hitting clutch threes in the playoffs. So, like, you know, shout out Frankie. And basically, I think when you're looking at things with Randle, you kind of have to just be like, okay, at the end of the day, this is a guy who thought he was the best player on his team, played like a you-know-what kind of bully, and didn't like to share the rock with them because what he thought would do with it is better. The second someone better than him, that everyone knew was better than him, that he knew was better than him, came in and came to the team, he was like, that's our guy, that's our leader, right? So, you know, I think it's there. I think the malleability is there. I think there's a scenario where Bogdanović and Burks are each shooting 49% from three in their last 20 games of the season, and everyone's laughing at, you know, the fact that they traded for them. No one's talking about the fact that Quentin Grimes is shooting 25% from the field and 15% from three in Detroit. Like, did I just make those numbers up off the top of my head? Yeah. Did you believe them? Yeah. So, like, I don't know, right? Like, he's actually shooting really poorly, for what it's worth. It's something around, like, 30% from the field. But I literally just made those numbers up, and they sound believable. It's not a big deal right now, in my opinion, because the Knicks are so future-oriented. I think it's the Knicks and the Thunder are the two teams with the best long-term outlooks in the NBA.
They have picks. That's why.
Exactly.
They have the picks.
So
whoever controls the picks in the NBA right now is the winner.
When it comes to the long-term expectations, I think we're all kind of in on this Knicks team and its ability to build long-term. But I want to ask you guys, for the rest of this season, set an expectation. So you're assuming everyone comes back healthy, right? What's the minimum amount of playoff wins that the Knicks have that you can say this season is one? It's not to say this is a success, but what's the least that they can win? So, like, for example, if they only won four games, if they go get swept in the second round, I don't think that that's great, right? Even if it's Boston in the second round, I don't think that that's great. So I would say absolute minimum six wins for this Knicks team in the playoffs. So they've got to win the first round. And that, I think, is a big, just a big indicator of where I think they're at. Will, how about you? How many playoff games?
Dad, I think I'm just a little bit ahead of you, KP. I think seven has to be the minimum. I think you have to push at least the second round to a game seven to give yourself a do or die. They're getting to a point where it's like, all right, we need to show a little bit of progress. Last year, we made it to the second round of the playoffs. It's now time to take it up a notch. They're going to look to make bigger moves this summer, particularly this summer. So how about, instead of staying stagnant and, you know, just kind of ending up the same way that they did last year, let's make a push. Let's go to seven games in the second round, really fight. And maybe some of those free agents or some of those trade pieces will be like, oh, yo, they're me away from being that much closer to the Bostons and the Milwaukees in the Eastern Conference.
I'm also going to go with seven wins. I think you have to be one game better than last year. They had six wins last year, almost forced that game seven against Miami. But I'm going to look at it a little differently. If you play anyone besides Boston in that second round, expectations-wise, I think you have to win the second round and make the Eastern Conference Finals. Realistically, the Bucks are getting hot recently, but they still aren't that team that they were pictured to be with Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I'm looking at for expectations for this healthy Knicks team would be seven wins. If you play the Celtics in the second round, at least take the Celtics to seven. But a good season where I would be happy with it would be a loss to the Boston Celtics, I think, would be the only way I could look at this season as a success, because every other team in the East, it's really wide open. You've seen them be able to beat the Cavs, and then the Bucks are the other team. The Heat aren't what they used to be. If Embiid doesn't come back, what are the Sixers without him? And then the Magic, a young team. So I'm going to put it at seven wins, but I think if you don't play the Celtics the second round, eight wins.
Well, seven wins, six wins, eight wins. These are all important figures to talk about at this juncture of the season. And I think it's important to set expectations, because now we can go back later in the season and say, hey, even amidst the Knicks struggles, we were this confident in them, et cetera, et cetera. Speaking of seven wins, here's a team that might only win that many games the whole rest of the season. Let's take the four train down to the Clays. All right. So the Brooklyn Nets, baby. Talk about setting expectations. I did a podcast with Miles Grossman. It was called Pick and Pod before the NBA season. And Miles said he's expecting Ben Simmons to just be a decent NBA player. And that is going to be a big thing for the Nets. I said, I'm selling all stock. There's no shot of anything. He has no work ethic. And I hate making personal criticisms like that. But from what I've heard, and I hate sounding like this too, but from what I've heard from little birdies out in the Nets organization and around the Nets organization, there's no organizational faith that Simmons is telling the truth about any of his health issues. Hangovers and back spasms are synonyms at this point in the Nets training room. And that some pretty serious accusations like that been thrown around. I'm not saying they're true, but I do think that when there's smoke, there's fire. And for Ben Simmons, now his season's over, a colossal failure of a season with the Brooklyn Nets. He was decent in some of the games he played. If you want to give him like an F plus or a D minus, God bless. But the point is, it's not enough to get a passing grade for the season because he just didn't play any games. And in the games he did play, he was really good in like 5 all season. And then he was okay in like 10. And maybe that's more games than he has even played this year. So with that being said, guys, I'm going to turn to you to talk productively about the Brooklyn Nets. All right. How can we talk productively? Oh, 15 games exactly played for Simmons this season. Wow, I nailed it. Anyway, to talk productively about these Brooklyn Nets, I want to talk about Ben Simmons taking up a third of their cap space. Talk about the fact that they have some momentum building up recently. They've beat Philly twice. They beat Philly without Embiid. They beat Atlanta twice without Trae Young. Obviously, they're beating injured teams, but they're winning games. Mikal Bridges is playing well. I do all this setup to say, do you guys care? Do you guys think there's any chance this team shows itself as being worth watching by the end of the season if you're not a fan or beat reporter? Do you care about the recent momentum? Do you think it's somewhat impressive they have that momentum despite a third of their salary cap being tied up to Ben Simmons, who doesn't play? Where are we at? Will, try to navigate us through this absolute just stuff storm here in Brooklyn.
I've been saying this since, like, I gotta say at least like December for the Nets. And that is, they should have been like in December playing for a draft pick. They should have been playing for a draft pick.
You know what they don't own?
They don't own their draft pick.
They don't own a draft pick. So there you go. Maybe they have to play. everything I was just gonna say, just like,
doesn't matter,
out the window because it's the Brooklyn Nets. Doesn't matter. They can't even play for a draft pick. So there you go. I mean,
James Harden is helping the Clippers.
That's where they're at. It's just they. Who cares is literally all I can say. It's exactly what you asked. And my answer is, who cares? Actually, they're such a like bottom middle of the road team to me. They're 3.5 games out of a play-in. If you're going to play for something, that's it. That's all you're going to play for. But do you have anybody on the team that wants to play for that? I don't know. I don't know. So Brooklyn has a lot of identity uncovering to do. They kind of go with this Mikal Bridges is our number one idea and then kind of backed out of that, and then now they're in it. They're so hot and cold. I think Bridges is just not a number one guy. They need a number one guy, but they're going about it in all the wrong ways, and it all kind of stems from them just going after KD and Kyrie and trying to
and Harden this, Harden's the whole thing. Picks went.
The whole thing that they tried to create, they tried to build a championship team in like 15 days. And now we're 5 years in and they're way worse. Yo, here's a take. I think they may be worse off now than they were post Garnett and Pierce. Thoughts on that? I think they're in a worse position than they were then.
It's a similar position.
I think it's going to be worse. In like a couple of years, I think this saga is going to end up being worse than Garnett and Pierce.
Well, we'll see. It's the same guy in charge, right? So Sean Marks still in charge of the team, still entrusted with them. Kevin Ollie, you know, the head coach now, videos are coming out of him going to fist bump the team to close a huddle. And literally like Cam Johnson's the only guy that fist bumps him. And then Cam Thomas is about to go in to fist bump him, but he sees Mikal walk away and not fist bump him. So he puts his fist down, turns around and walks away. This team is a mess, an unadulterated, unfiltered mess. But I do want to say there are ways out of this hole, right? You've got Dariq Whitehead and Noah Clowney playing in Long Island. If you can't play for a draft pick, then sell parts like Royce O'Neal to teams like Phoenix, right? You take a look at Phoenix and Brooklyn. KD and Kyrie, KD and Booker, second round exit, right? But they had to have Harden. They had to have Beal. Now they've got nothing. They couldn't even draft an eighth grader right now if they wanted to. They don't have picks up until I'll be 34. Okay, so when we're in that kind of situation with Brooklyn, I said on Pick and Pod so many times this year, they need to be all over the Jonathan Kuminga situation because it's going to blow up. It's going to go public, and they need to trade for him. Never heard a single rumor, right? I said the Nets pro scouts need to be working overtime, identifying talent on other teams. Malik Monk got drafted by Charlotte. Now he's going to win Sixth Man of the Year. No one cared about him in his first 2 years in the NBA. Lonnie Walker is still playing minutes for Brooklyn, right? But he was a draft bust after.
Oh, can I just interrupt? Why didn't they trade him? Why didn't they trade Lonnie Walker? They had one of the worst deadlines, I think, of all time. And Houston, I think that's where I'm getting the, like, they should play for the draft picks. That could have been like playing for the draft picks. They had a terrible deadline.
So I can tell you guys, last year, I was the first to report in the NBA landscape, you know, whoopee, go me, no one cared, that the Memphis Grizzlies offered 4 first-round picks for Mikal Bridges. Last offseason, I was told the Portland Trailblazers offered both Anfernee Simons and the number 3 overall pick for Mikal Bridges. At this deadline, I was told the Houston Rockets offered 3 first-round picks for Mikal Bridges. They are so stuck in their sunken cost fallacy related issues that they just can't shake it. They won't move Mikal. They think, oh, look, crosstown. Randall was the number one option when he shouldn't have been, and now he's such a good passer. Mikal, the same thing will happen. Yeah, I actually agree. I think it's great for Mikal that they're developing his ancillary skills by making him a primary, but the team isn't good. There's no pick to play for. There's no exciting young talent in the rotation. It's just going to take another year before we care, and I think that's okay. Do we feel like that's a fair thing to say?
I mean, do you think it's take another year? They don't have their first round pick next year either. And when you brought up the Mikal Bridges thing, I think the Rockets picks that they were offering back, weren't they the Nets picks that they were offering to give back from the James Harden trade?
Yep.
So then you could have done what Will said, and you could become a tanking team, especially in a draft class that after this year is going to be stacked next year. So you could have tanked next year and had your picks back, and you would have kind of reset your franchise, but not trading Mikal Bridges and looking at Lonnie Walker, that's really what sets this team back. And if I could have the job security that Sean Marks has, I mean, I'd be set for life. I mean, that's incredible. 2 times now just destroying a team's future. And this guy just still keeps his job. It's kind of crazy to see. But the Nets, they really don't have a future unless Mikal Bridges really turns it to another gear and becomes that superstar, I guess, that they believe he can be. But like you said, they have a couple of young, talented players, but they really don't have a direction they can go in. I think in this offseason, they got to look for a coach that can, like, set a culture. Like when Tom Thibodeau came in, he set that culture for a Knicks team. The only difference was the Knicks still had their picks and something to build off of. But first thing the Nets are going to have to do is establish a culture. But I mean, even when you look back at Ben Simmons, they traded all those picks to get James Harden, which then now they don't have any picks. And then they traded James Harden for Ben Simmons, who's now taking up all this cap space. So they just kind of can't get over the fact that they blew up the whole Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and it didn't work. And now they're just sitting, hoping all of the trades they made, losing those guys, can become something that they can build around.
Well, I guess we close with this, and I'll start with you. Man, what's the hope for Brooklyn in a sentence? Sell me on being this team's head coach next year.
Okay, wait. So for next year, what's the sell?
There's no way Ollie stays, right? So they're hiring someone this offseason. You're Sean Marks. You're keeping that job. How do you get a coach to come and take your money?
I mean, I think first it's going to have to start in free agency. It's the only way they can upgrade their team. They can't go through the draft, obviously. So I think it needs to start with they need a plan. They never seem to have a plan in place for what the on the court product is. It's always something else. Their on the court product, when they were emphasizing that was KD and Kyrie. And then that didn't work out. So they need to get back to, all right, what are we going to have on the court? And who is going to coach that on the court talent? I think if I'm the Nets, I'm looking for more of a bridge kind of coach. I'm not looking for a big name. I'm looking for someone who is going to at least help establish some kind of direction. They're going to establish some kind of direction. And they're just going to set them straight.
Oh, and how do you sell a coach?
I mean, I really don't know how you're ever going to convince a coach to come coach this team. They have no players that you look forward to. I mean, I guess the best coach you'd look at would be Tom Thibodeau. I mean, he would love to come coach these guys and see if he could get the most out of them. I guess that type of coach, maybe bring in Doc Rivers, see if he wants to leave the Bucks. But realistically, I don't know who. I mean, a young guy maybe that would want to come.
I was going to say, Steve Clifford, Nick Nurse, these names are all taken right now. You got to find a young version.
Go get
Dice Yoshimoto off of Thibodeau's staff, or go get Johnny Bryan off of Thibodeau's staff.
See, Dice, that's a good example. That's kind of who I was like envisioning. Somebody that you can give a chance to. Don't go right for a big name. Go for someone that, you know, they're going to get their first shot possibly at a position like that.
See, I feel like the problem with that, though, is then that coach isn't going to come in and be able to establish a culture or have, like, the reputation of
bringing. But he can, though. He can, because they have nothing. Because they're such a mess, he can scrap it. Whoever this first-time head coach is can scrap it and go their way. There's no big name right now, and they don't have a team that needs a big name. What big-name coach would want to coach a team that they have right now? You know?
Someone who made some poor investments on Robinhood during COVID and needs Joe Tsai's money. Yeah. Well, listen, Will, you're talking about them going their way. I think it's just about time for us to go our own separate ways here on Pick and Pod, WFUV Sports' exclusive NBA podcast. I want to thank Will Talent and Owen Kelty for their insight today, both bringing honest perspective to the table. And that's why I loved this conversation. I'm Chris Persiainen, and thank you guys for tuning in. WFUV Sports has a whole bunch of podcasts. If there's a sport you like, we cover it. If there's a team you like in the New York City area, we cover them. Stay tuned to our coverage on all social media platforms, Spotify, Twitter, YouTube, everything in between, and check out our TikTok as well. Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports, managed by Bobby Chaffardini. Thanks so much for tuning in.